Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. On this episode, I'm going to talk to founder of Spoke, Ben Farron. And Spoke is a new kind of menswear brand focused on legs and fit. There is little in this life worse than a poorly fitting pair of trousers. And 7 years ago, they set out to banish them forever. 500,000 pairs sold later, they cut their strides in over 200 sizes, custom finished to order for a flawless fit. Of course, only one pair is your perfect size, so they built an online fit finder with a machine learning algorithm to help men find their size, and not a fitting room in sight. Spoke stock a large range of products from casual drawstring chinos to Italian wool slacks via their best-selling stretch cotton sharps, and they've recently added premium denim and swim shorts too. You can find out more about the brand through the website at spoke-london.com, and here is Ben Farron to tell the story of how it all began.
I became increasingly preoccupied with the idea that e-commerce was a way to solve both of these problems at once. So I think in the way most people tell the story, the genius of e-commerce lies in the opportunity for digital arbitrage. So cutting out the middlemen, cutting out the retail overheads to offer you a better product at a better price. That's how people often think of direct-to-consumer brands in fashion and outside the sector too. And I suppose my position on that is that it's largely bollocks. It's just not true. Everything that I save in rent, I am having to give back in the form of the rent I pay to Facebook and Google. I live in fear of tumbleweed spinning across my website and people not visiting, and I pay expensively to make sure that they do. So I don't think there is that sort of fundamental shift in the economics that explains the value of e-commerce. Instead, my position on it is that a digital model e-commerce represents this wonderful opportunity to focus really hard. I'm not enthralled to footfall. I'm not trying to make as much of the passing trade as I possibly can. I can use the reach of the web to go after one customer with real singularity of purpose and vision and send them a stream of products and messages that really resonate. And in that lies, some really strong economics. If you do that, you're able to acquire customers at a lower price, and you're often able to inspire a bit more loyalty through that very direct and focused connection that you're making with them. And I think that is in large part the genius of e-commerce, this opportunity to focus. But additionally, I can solve that fit problem that I mentioned earlier. You know, when I'm able to gather all of my inventory in one place rather than spreading it thin, I can run through dramatically more sizes. And that opportunity is only improved when I also finish to order, which is something we do here at Spoke. So suddenly, rather than offering the usual 20 to 30 sizes in trousers, which is where we've made most of our business over the last 6 or 7 years, we're able to run to 400, soon 600 size variations, silhouette variations. And that's really powerful. I mean, fit isn't rocket science. Anybody that tells you they've solved fit by coming up with a clever new pattern that is better adapted to the male body is full of it. That's not true. That you can't patent a pattern. The only way to deliver better fit is to run to more sizes, to offer more granularity in the way that you in the range of sizes that you offer, and as I say, through a remote digital model, we're able to do that, most especially because we finish every pair to order, right. That's the model that underpins our business.
Great. And did you start with trousers primarily and then work your way through to more products?
Yeah, trousers are still very much the heartland of our business. Seemed like a good beachhead. If you look at the nav of almost any brand or retailer, the trousers tend to be in fifth or sixth slot. They're an afterthought, and yet they are half of the outfit. And they're really, really hard to get right. We all know the purgatory of shopping for trousers, of walking into a dimly lit changing room with a small pile of them and stumbling around, emptying your pockets and stumbling around as you try them on, and they do that awkward dance in front of the communal mirror outside. I mean, it's a really terrible experience, and one that, it struck me, had tons of headroom for improvement. It simultaneously seemed to be neglected by a lot of other brands. You put all of that together, it feels like a good beachhead to explore these ideas. And certainly that's where we've focused, as I say, over the last 6 or 7 years.
Ben, whenever I'm done doing these chats, I always talk to my girlfriend afterwards. And the one question she always asks that I forget to ask is, how did they raise the capital? So, because she's money oriented, she always goes, well, how did he get going? So I'll put that to you on behalf of my girlfriend.
Sure. No, it's a good question. It's a really important question. I mean, there's no doubt that starting an apparel brand is it's a working capital hungry business, and figuring out how you're going to finance that is an incredibly important part of the journey. So how did I do it? I bootstrapped initially. So I put away a little war chest in my previous life as a management consultant, and merrily spent my way through that in the first sort of 6 or 9 months of preparation. But in so doing, was able to cut a few hundred pairs of trousers, and more importantly, sell through them at a reasonable pace to friends and friends of friends, in a way that demonstrated some traction and was enough to give me the confidence and conviction to put a pitch together and to put that pitch in front of initially friends and family. And after that first round to cross the Rubicon and pitch it to institutional capital, to formal venture capital investors, which I did for the first time in, I want to say, at the end of 2014, I was able to raise a few hundred thousand pounds from a fund called Forward Partners, who have been great partners for the business ever since. And with the money that they raised for me, we were able to hit a whole new set of milestones, get the business to, you know, 6-figure sales per month. And at that point, a new raft of venture capital investors became interested. And I've been able to repeat that trick a couple of times since to grow the business to the scale it's at today.
Okay. Interesting. And I'm curious to know, you're saying about what you save on rent, your spend on digital marketing. When you first launched this 2013, social media, Instagram wasn't like the monolith that it is today, etc. And what was the landscape like for you, if you can remember back then, when you launched the brand and the e-commerce site? What was, you know, what were you entering into?
It felt like the market was ready for this. I think, you know, I was in part inspired by this kind of Cambrian explosion of direct-to-consumer brands, mostly admittedly in the US. But I could see an awful lot of direct-to-consumer apparel brands growing very fast and delivering some very impressive numbers in a short space of time. And I couldn't think of structural reasons why that wouldn't happen in the UK. So I didn't ever feel like it was especially hostile environment or bad timing. At no point did it occur to me that I might have gone too soon. And actually, reflecting specifically on digital marketing, I'd say that it was a pretty good time to be on Facebook. It's true that Instagram hadn't quite become the beast it is today. But Facebook ads were just getting going. And I'd argue actually it was a greener field back then. It was less competitive, so cheaper to have a cheaper inventory on Facebook. And yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest, I think about the kind of eye-wateringly low customer acquisition costs that I was paying back in 2013 and 2014, and wonder why I didn't push the accelerator harder. It was actually a great time to be advertising at least on those channels. So yeah, it's a good way to get started. And you know, the beauty of Facebook, that I suppose the really important difference between the rent that I might pay a landlord and the rent that I pay Facebook, and this has become incredibly salient over the past 12 months, is that I can elect to stop paying Facebook on a dime. You know, I could turn around and just slash my budgets to zero tomorrow if I want to. which is, of course, not the kind of relationship you typically form with a landlord. And I mean, my word, that's been important in the last 12 months. You know, our ability to modulate our spend in response to a very changing demand picture has been incredibly helpful, obviously, in difficult circumstances through COVID. But back then, back in 2013, 2014, that the fact that, you know, you have this advertising channel over which you have so much control over daily spends is really important for giving you the confidence to invest in your marketing. It makes the whole thing feel manageable from a risk perspective, in a way that I think really helped me to get the brand off the ground and properly scaling.
Right. And do you have any kind of other inventive ways to leverage traffic through various social platforms, or is it literally just kind of Google ads and pay to click, etc.?
I mean, there's no doubt that PPC has formed the backbone of our growth over the last four or five years. In the early days, we were seeded by friends and family, and then that, you know, was obviously multiplied by the referrals that follow your initial sales. And referrals have continued to be a really important part of the mix since then. But in terms of supplying, you know, a continuous stream of customers at the top of the funnel, yeah, our paid advertising has remained important and has expanded beyond those online channels to some offline channels too. So for a while, we found that heading down the traditional catalog route was incredibly lucrative for us. It was a really great way to scale. You know, in the early days of doing that back in 2016, felt like turning on a tap. It was extraordinary how many customers we were able to acquire, how quickly. And it turns out, you know, direct mail is a pretty sophisticated space. You know, the data modeling that goes on to select, you know, the prospects that you might send a catalog to is pretty sophisticated. The targeting's good, and so you tend to convert pretty well. I'd say that space has got a bit more complicated over the last couple of years, and I think there's two things at work there. GDPR, which I think is an important and positive development, has nonetheless reduced the turnover in the pools of data that you can buy into to find new customer prospects. So it's just, you know, it's a less consistent supply of great new leads, and it's just become more competitive. I mean, just look at the volume of stuff coming through your letterbox every week. It felt like we were one of relatively few menswear brands back in the day, but even that is changing now. And so, you know, that may not be the opportunity that it once was. But look, I mean, that's just another paid channel. And it's true to say that paid channels have formed a, you know, really important part of our growth over the 6 or 7 years that we've been trading, albeit that it is, you know, having healthy organic metrics and making sure that people continue to refer you to their friends is hugely important to make the economic stack up, and I'm pleased to say that too has always been a feature of the business, and it's the fact that you get that multiplier on top of the stuff that you pay for that you can really make it work.
Yeah, well, listen, it was actually quite a blessing in disguise, I suppose, to find your website, because since lockdown, especially shopping for trousers, because I'm a kind of awkward size, I've actually just refrain from buying any kind of trousers online, because, you know, I kind of slide between the gaps like many guys do, with like the thick thighs but short legs, and, you know, and you get your typical brands that might be a size down or a size up depending on what the brand is. So I've been wearing my last pair of jeans down to the last thread and finding your website with the different algorithms of where you could actually adjust your thigh size as well, so it's not just your waist and your leg size, but you could put it through a little fit algorithm to, you know, depend on whether you're on a slim leg or a slightly wider leg. Could you just talk a little bit about that, please, and how you managed to tweak and formulate and get the kind of the fit ratio to where it is today on the website?
Sure. So I suppose the first thing to say is that besides paying proper attention to those half sizes and making sure that we cover all the odd numbers, which applies just as importantly in the leg as it does in the waist. I mean, quite literally, half of the world has an odd-numbered leg, and yet it's virtually impossible to buy trousers outside of the standard 30, 32, and 34-inch lengths. Which means that there's this huge raft of people taking everything that they buy to the dry cleaners to have them properly shortened.
Right.
And that's a huge issue that we address.
I literally did that yesterday. Bought a pair of... It's so annoying.
It's so tedious. It's a really binary thing. You know, if you can take something out of the box and put it on and wear it right away, that is a dramatically better experience than any level of adjustment that you might have to do afterwards. And I think we've all been trained to think this business of going to the dry cleaners is normal and acceptable. And it doesn't seem like something we need to put up with in 2021. So that's obviously something that we're solving for alongside those odd numbers wastes. But the other thing, as you say, is that we try to address the build of the man. There are some very different ratios out there between waist and size of waist and size of seat or thigh. In other words, you know, some guys are really heavily set and some guys are really lean. And it seems to me like in the trouser category, there has been this utter preoccupation for as long as anybody can remember with the lower half of the leg, you know, how wide your hem is. Of course, the trend over the last 10 to 15 years is to make those quite narrow and, you know, marvel at the boot cuts that we were all sporting in the late 90s.
I was there. Doubtless,
yeah, me too. And make no mistake, they're coming back. You know, those hems are widening again.
I hope so. I don't mind those.
But the point is that, you know, that has always been the preoccupation. And when we started Spoke, we took a position that actually the top half, if anything, matters more. Getting that ratio right between the waist and the thigh is where the magic happens. You talk to a guy who's got a bigger seat or a bigger thigh, and it's really painful. You know, the way they solve the problem is by buying a pair of trousers that's fundamentally too big, certainly too big in the waist, and then they'll crank up a belt to try and make it work, and it's uncomfortable and unflattering. If instead you can make sure you create a trouser that opens out properly in the thigh and seat immediately underneath the waist, then you can eliminate that trade-off. You know, they can buy something that fits perfectly in the waist without a belt and yet offer them the space in the thigh and seat. And the reverse is true, by the way. I mean, there's plenty of guys out there, and I might even put myself in this category, who have no seat at all, who are just incredibly flat all the way down. And, you know, who find that, you know, a trouser with any room in it just flaps around in a way that looks really terrible from the back. And, you know, for those guys, our build A, our narrower cut is perfect. Again, they could find something that fits perfectly in the waist and yet it's still flattering through the rest of the leg. So that was really important. And then it's worth mentioning that actually our size scheme runs to four dimensions. So we have waist, including the odd sizes, leg in virtually any leg length. Those three builds, A, B, and C, for different levels of heft in your thigh and seat. And then we also offer a different offerings in the lower leg. At the moment, we offer a regular leg, which is a gentle taper, and then a more sharply tapered leg for those that are looking for that. And consistent with that trend that I referred to earlier, we've got a straighter leg coming too in the not too distant future. So you can make those alterations below the knee as well to suit your style or taste, but more importantly to suit your shape and your fit, we have everything covered in the top half too.
Right, interesting. And I'm just trying to thumb my way through the website to see if you do any pleated trousers. I can't see any at the moment.
They're coming.
Ah, all right. Yeah, are you getting?
They were actually supposed to come in autumn winter, and I mean maybe you want to head in this direction, but you know that we had to cut back on the buy last year, and consequently they didn't reach the range quite as soon as we planned. But you can expect some pleated stuff in the not too distant future.
Nice. And do you think with pleated trousers kind of making a full circle coming back, and typically with pleated trousers, they're worn higher up, like on the waist. Do you think
that's something that you'll be factoring in as well into the algorithm.
Oh yeah, we're definitely changing the rise to accommodate that in that particular trouser, and we'll be styling it in a way that's consistent with that when you see it photographed. So yeah, I mean, this is definitely a sort of a stylistic choice that we are catering for here, but it requires a fundamental rethinking of the silhouette. It's not just a case of, you know, chucking some pleats in.
Yeah. Do you know where my mind's eye is going with this, Ben? I'm thinking Cary Grant to catch a thief. And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I think about how we'll market this, those are exactly the sort of references that we'll be making.
Right. Okay. I mean, like, that whole film, the first half is more about his trousers than it is about Monaco or anything else going on in the film. So, I mean, I was glued to them trousers all the way through. Yeah. I mean, how would it stand legally? Would you even be able to use any kind of screen grabs from certain films or references?
Wow.
Or is that going into a bit of a dicey area?
Probably not at scale. I don't know what you could do on social. I haven't really looked into it. But sometimes, yeah, often there are creative ways of making those references without ripping them off directly in a way that gives you some sort of dodgy legal exposure. But we'll definitely try to do that and to evoke the spirit of that film, because I think you've nailed it.
Interesting. Well, listen, Ben, I could talk to you for hours about trousers, about Cary Grant, but I appreciate you've got a life to lead. For anyone listening that wants to check the trousers out, that and other shirts and t-shirts and other things going on in the spite, so it's spoke-london.com, place to go, and also on Instagram, spoke_london. But we'll leave all the links and references over on the show notes so people can find and have a good time over there. And also, I should say, when I went on the site, I was expecting, after doing all the algorithms of putting in my sizes, my weight, I complimented myself and put Shredded Pete in, because it's like a dad bod Dean or average Joe, and I thought, I'm Pete, you know, I ran today, I can put Shredded Pete in. I was expecting like this result to kind of come back and go, there's 180 quid for a pair of trousers, you know, but very accessible prices. So
yeah, we're definitely trying to create something that's got some reasonably wide appeal. I think that's important. Otherwise, it's hard to convince yourself you're solving a big problem. So yeah, hopefully that's where they get pitched.
Yeah, awesome, great. Well, Ben, thanks again for your time, and best of luck.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you all for tuning into this episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. If you like what you hear, why not leave a review? It does help my ego. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode and all content pertaining to fashion, watches, grooming and lifestyle over at www.menswearstyle.co.uk. We're on the social also at Menswear Style. If you want to be a guest on the show and tell us about your brand and your journey, you can email us here at info@menswearstyle.co.uk. And until next time.